Oyez, oyez, the Honorable, the Supreme Court of Texas. All persons having business before the Honorable, the Supreme Court of Texas are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the state of Texas and this honorable court.
Thank you. Be seated. This morning, the court has five causes consolidated into three oral arguments. In each of these oral arguments, we have allotted a time for each side to present an argument, 25 minutes per side in the first consolidated argument, and 20 minutes per side in the remaining two arguments. The petitioners or petitioner may reserve a portion of that time for rebuttal by so advising the marshal of the court. And we will complete these arguments before lunch, taking a brief recess in between each argument. In the order in which the arguments will be heard, they are L. Colster versus City of El Paso and City of Amarillo versus Erica Shane Martin from El Paso and Potter counties. Dennis Gross and Sam Moore versus Priscilla Enns and others from Dallas County. And Epic Holdings and others versus the Honorable Hugh Snodgrass and the Honorable Joe Brown, consolidated with Kenneth George versus the Honorable Joe Brown and the Honorable Hugh Snodgrass, both of those original mandamus proceedings. Court is ready to hear arguments from petitioners in Colster and El Paso and Amarillo versus Martin.
May it please the court, Mr. Glenn Turquan and Mr. Dudley Mann will present arguments for the petitioners. Mr. Turquan will open with the first 10 minutes. Petitioners have reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal, and Dudley Mann will present the rebuttal.
May it please the court. My name is Glenn Turquan, and I represent the respondent in City of Amarillo versus Martin. I will be sharing my time once again with Mr. Dudley Mann, who has issues as he had lost at the lower court, the El Paso Court of Appeals. I will speak for approximately 10 minutes. The central issue presented today by these two cases is what is the meaning of due regard for the safety of others as it relates to the duty of care owed by authorized emergency vehicle operators when responding to emergency calls. Essentially, these two cases share similar facts in that an emergency vehicle, in my case, a fire truck, in Mr. Mann's case, an ambulance, entered an intersection without checking to see if it was clear. Essentially, entered the intersection blind. The City of Amarillo equates due regard with reckless disregard, and the City of El Paso says that due regard is an intermediate standard imposing a duty less than ordinary care, but greater than reckless disregard. Unless the court has more questions about the facts, I would like to address what I believe to be the meaning of due regard and how it should be given its common meaning. Now, while courts have understood due regard in its ordinary meaning, that being reasonable care, due care, or requiring a negligence analysis, I believe none have analyzed it to the extent at why they reach this conclusion other than by and through its ordinary meaning. Perhaps it is enough to say that due regard means ordinary care, but I would like to present to this court a short analysis of Section 24, 6701D to explain why perhaps this court might want to offer an analysis in deciding this decision and the meaning of due regard. The Texas Tort Claims Act provides that a governmental unit specifically retains its immunity in claims arising from the actions of an employee while responding to an emergency if the action is in compliance with the laws and ordinances applicable to an emergency action. The Texas Tort Claims Act, by this clause, sends us to the Texas Revised Civil Statutes, Article 6701D. Wherein we find Section 24. The importance of understanding why Section 24 is there is that it provides that an authorized driver of an emergency vehicle may proceed through a red light without being held negligent per se or strictly liable for merely going through the red light. Due regard comes into play in that due regard is saying, notwithstanding the fact that you would not be held negligent per se, you do have a duty, and that is to act with due regard and ordinary regard for the safety of others. Reckless disregard comes into play where, despite the fact that you will be held to a negligent standard, you also will be held liable for exemplary damages in the case of an authorized emergency vehicle. I don't think this is problematic with the TTCA because that specifically exempts emergency government emergency vehicles. Due regard for the safety of others is just a jury consideration for determining whether or not there is negligence in this type of situation. In Mr. Mann's jury charge, or that he presented to the court, which in turn presented to the jury, he specifically laid out negligence being not acting with due regard for the safety of others. Thus, I think that due regard for the safety of others, as the legislature has put it into Section 24, is nothing more than providing the circumstances by which the jury is to consider what is negligence in this type of situation. Thus, it is more procedural than it is substantive. I also believe it is in line with a broad form submission. I also think that this court reached the same conclusion in the City of Lancaster versus Chambers. In the body of the text under the heading of negligence, the court did speak to Section 24 and recognize that due regard falls under a negligence analysis. I did not have the opportunity to file a brief to this court because of the trial attorney representing Ms. Martin died. However, neither my case, Mr. Mann's case, or any of the Court of Appeals mentions footnote number 5 in the City of Lancaster versus Chambers. The court in Chambers needed to explain their new standard of good faith. And good faith can be recognized as an intermediate standard because the jury is to consider, or the court in the summary judgment proceeding is to consider, good faith as that being of an ordinary and prudent officer. And it needed to compare this with some other example where there was an ordinary or there was a gross negligence standard. In footnote number 5, the court took the time to explain that good faith is different from ordinary or gross negligence as represented in 6701D, Section 24. Thus, I ask this court to follow the Chamber's decision and when it used that example, and all the lower court decisions, including the City of Mesquite, where the court has applied its ordinary meaning to due regard, and that being requiring a negligence analysis or meaning ordinary care. Thus, I contend to this court today that if we simply use the ordinary meaning and find that the legislature has provided this clause as a procedural issue for the trial court to put in a jury question, I think we find the answer as simple as that. I will now turn.
Let me just ask you a question. It appears that the court is more persuaded by public policy considerations rather than statute in deciding these cases. Can you address that argument?
Well, I think the public policy issue is addressed by saying that they must look towards the due regard for the safety of others. If you mean the public policy issue in not exempting the, in providing, in not exempting the state from the acts of its negligent driver, I think that's where we get into analysis of what good faith does, and that is an official immunity example, whereas the due regard for the safety of others only applies to the government, in this case the city, coming through the Texas Tort Claims Act. And I don't think that it interrupts any policy consideration in any way, Your Honor. If there are no more questions, I'd like to turn over the case to Mr. Dunn, as he has a larger burden of explaining to the court why the lower court acted as a super fact finder.
Any other questions? Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
May it please the court. Although this court granted my writ of application on 7 points, I can only speak on 2 the limited time I have. The first point that the Court of Civil Appeals found, I will talk about due regards first. The Court of Civil Appeals in El Paso found that it was uncontroverted that Sloan, the ambulance driver, was driving without corrective lenses at the time of the collision. That was uncontroverted. I produced in the courtroom large blow-ups of the driver's license showing it had the A restriction requiring her to wear glasses. She received a ticket for not having glasses. She didn't have them on. She didn't even have them with her. The second thing that the court determined, in way of an affirmative finding, was that the ambulance driver's duty, before proceeding through the intersection, to make sure that the intersection is clear before the ambulance proceeds and running through a red light. The court found that the ambulance driver never saw the plaintiff's vehicle prior to entering the intersection.
But those are fairly... The jury?
Do what now?
The jury found that?
Jury found it. Okay. Well, let me answer it this way. As been pointed out, the jury was asked that the driver in an emergency vehicle is never relieved of the duty to drive with due regard for the safety of all persons. In response to that, the jury found 55% negligence on behalf of the city and 45% negligence on behalf of my client. You would think with those findings by the jury that they would be conclusory on the Court of Civil Appeals. But it's my opinion, with one of the panel being a former alderman, that the city decided, that the Court of Civil Appeals decided who would win and proceeded to draw their decision based on letting the city win. The conclusion that was used by the Justice Larson was there was simply no showing that the ambulance driver did anything but proceed with due regard in compliance with applicable laws. Now, how do you determine what the applicable laws are? Well, we know what the other cases help due regard. The city of Amarillo gave us a decision on that. But Justice Larson concluded that due regard described a standard between ordinary care and recklessness to come up with a new standard in order to fit the situation of the particular case. She contended that the legislature had intended for emergency vehicles to use ordinary, that they would have used ordinary care in drafting the statute. That was her contention. Due care. We conclude, in their opinion, they said, we conclude that the evidence in this case raised no fact issues of the city's lack of due care, which in any way was a casual factor in this accident. Now, let's talk about the definition of due care. Due regard is due care. Due care is due regard. I served two terms in the legislature. I can tell you that when in committee, we went to great lengths to trying to take these words and determine what they were. We took the advice of professors, we took the advice of judges. And I think, in my opinion, that in drafting this statute, history shows they looked at other states. And I think that they used due regard synonymous with due care. If you listen to it and due regard in the terms of due care, it sounds like something a doctor might do. So consequently, I think the legislature chose due care synonymous with due regard. There are cases that define due care as being an ordinary standard of negligence. Now let me talk about no evidence standard that was applied by the court. The court found that the evidence was uncontradicted that the restriction on the ambulance driver's license, the AA department, was in fact a mistake. She testified that, in her opinion, she didn't need glasses because she only needed them for reading and close work. I contradicted that with the testimony of the Texas Department of Public Safety, Sergeant Mormon, head of the driver's license division of El Paso, who came in forth and testified as to the restriction of these blown-up license plates, the driver's license that we showed, and also testified that they always give the eye exam. I have laid that testimony out at great length in my brief, that they always give the eye exam, that you're required to take the eye exam. Now, the ambulance driver, Dawn Sloan, testified they did not require her to take the eye test. She said she merely said that she wore glasses, so they put the restriction. And it was a mistake. She did not believe that she should be required to wear glasses. That was her justification that the Court of Civil Appeals accepted. and said it was uncontroverted, and uncontroverted in spite of the fact, that the police officer, Department of Public Safety officer, testified that they always give the eye test.
Well, was there no testimony from a doctor or optometrist about what her vision was?
We didn't have any of that. That was not, it was all submitted.
I know, but why didn't you go out and get it?
I can't hear you.
Why did you not get it?
Well, I didn't know what conference she'd gone to, and I didn't know what she had done. Her husband was a police officer. He told her these things, and that's what she, where this came from. Now, forgive me for leaving the bench, but
it's okay.
Okay. And to rule that was uncontroverted means that she disregarded the expert's witness's testimony completely. There was certain evidence that was conflicting. When there was a conflicting evidence that an obstruction existed which prevented Colster, my client, from having a clear view of the intersection. Now, the evidence was conflicting. That's because in the brief filed by the city attorney, they said that they gave the different witnesses as to what they testified to, the parties. And then in their brief, which you have before you, they said that there were no other witnesses of any value other than those that spoke about personal injury or damages. The Court of Civil Appeals disregarded the three expert witnesses that were called. The first expert witness they called, the city called it, it was a civil engineer, Dr. Robertson, from Bryan, Texas, who had testified some 24 times on behalf of the government, had testified twice before for the city of El Paso. In cross-examining him, I asked him what time did he go out to, did he come into town, he came into town and he went out to the intersection. I asked him what time he went out there. He went out there around 1:30 in the afternoon. This accident happened at 5 o'clock. At 5 o'clock, the traffic is lined up so far down the side of this. There are three bridges that cross over into Mexico in this area. One of them is the Zaragoza Bridge. This accident happened at the intersection of Zaragoza and Alameda. The cars on the right turn right to go across the bridge into Mexico. At 5 o'clock, there are buses, vans, trucks, everything lined up in the right-hand lane to turn right. The eyewitness, to show you how close the bridge is, the eyewitness, Vasquez, who saw this, was walking across the bridge and walking down the street on the right-hand side of the intersection, and he testified, an independent witness, he testified that he could not see the Colster vehicle because of the cars both in the turning right and in a filling station, a gasoline filling station there, that were getting gas. He could not see the Colster car until it entered the intersection. The Court of Civil Appeals shifted the burden and said it was conflicting. When I asked Dr. Robinson when he went out there at 1:30 what the cars were like, there were just a few cars. I asked him, did he know that the accident happened at 5 o'clock? He said no. Then I asked him if he would do like I. He read the depositions, and he found out that at the time of the impact, that the driver of the ambulance was talking or looking to the right. The attendant saw the Colster vehicle when it entered the intersection. The reaction on her face caused Don Sloan, the ambulance driver, to turn to the left and see the car as it entered the intersection. I showed pictures and asked her a series of pictures where the car was. And the Colster vehicle was crossing the walkway stripes when they first saw it. Now, in Dr. Robinson's testimony, I asked him what the standard was and what the duties were, and I asked him would he agree with me that had he been driving the ambulance, that he would have been hanging out over the steering wheel looking to the left instead of looking to the right. And he said, that's correct. Yet the Court of Civil Appeals said that evidence was conflicting. It was not conflicting. The jury got to see that. But by completely disregarding the testimony of first Sergeant Mormon from the Department of Public Safety concerning a driver's license requirements. Secondly, their own witness, which they're bound by, and Dr. Robinson testifying that they did not look in the direction in which they should have been looking, that is to the left as they went to the intersection. And thirdly, the testimony of Cameron Burchett. Cameron Burchett was the instructor that trained both the ambulance driver and the attendant. And he testified that they have a manual, and we introduced it into evidence, that the manual says that you enter in red light, through a red light, you must make eye contact, and I repeat the term, you must make eye contact with the oncoming vehicles before you proceed to the intersection. He said that's what he had trained the driver to do, and that's what he said the standard was, a requirement of the department. So although the Court of Civil Appeals found this evidence was conflicting, I tell you, by disregarding the three expert witnesses, that's what it would take to find this conflicting. Now, it is my opinion that the Court of Civil Appeals did not apply the proper standard of care. They cited the fact that there was a no evidence situation, but then proceeded to completely disregard the findings of the jury, finding that the city was negligent by 55%, and that my client, Ms. Coulter, was only negligent 45%. I think that they completely disregarded the standard of care, and therefore, this case should be reversed and rendered on behalf of the trial court's findings of the jury. I submit time, and I have permits for questions.
Do you have any questions? Thank you, counsel. Court is ready to hear argument from, too easy to say, respondent.
May it please the court, Mr. Merrill Nutt and Mr. John Case will present an argument for the respondent. And Mr. Merrill Nutt will open for the first 15 minutes.
If please the court, I am Merrill Nutt. I'm the city attorney for the city of Amarillo. Let me say at the outset that I certainly appreciate the court taking its time to hear us on this case. I know you know you don't have to, and it's a privilege to be here. Mr. Turquan has pretty accurately stated the issue before the court today in both of these appeals, and that is what is meant by the term reckless disregard for the safety of others vis-a-vis drivers, and especially governmental drivers of emergency vehicles. He has not correctly stated the result of that issue, though, because my contention is he told the court that I equated it with reckless disregard, but I have stated in my brief that I do not equate it with reckless disregard, but on the contrary, the absence of reckless disregard, as did the Court of Appeals in Colster versus City of El Paso. That decision is difficult because the court did not tell us what the standard of care is, but told us instead what it is not. The court said it is not ordinary negligence, and it is not reckless disregard. Well, the court is right on both of those counts because it is definitely not ordinary negligence. And then my contention is that it cannot be reckless disregard for the safety of others for several reasons.
Mr. Nunn, let me ask you.
Yes, sir.
You say it's not ordinary negligence, but if negligence is defined, doing that which a person of ordinary prudence would not have done, or failing to do that which a person of ordinary prudence would have done under the same or similar circumstances, why isn't this statute simply an alerting the jury that the circumstances we're talking about are the emergency circumstances as opposed to the ordinary circumstances of people driving down the street? So why isn't due regard simply an alert to the jury when you're involving an emergency vehicle and emergency response that we're talking about emergency circumstances and you gauge their conduct whether a person under the same or similar circumstances would have done what they did or would not have done what they did? Why isn't that sufficient?
I think that you have put your finger precisely on the point because there's a case called Vaccaro versus Salas out of San Antonio in which the San Antonio Court of Appeals says the same thing. It talks about the public policy. It says that the emergency vehicle drivers should not be judged by the same standard of care as an ordinary person driving down the street, because an ordinary person does not have statutory provision, as is granted in Section 24, to drive above the speed limits, to run red lights, to drive on the wrong side of the street, to park on the wrong side of the street, to go through stop signs, and to do all of the other things that emergency vehicle drivers are allowed by Section 24 to do.
But my point is, if negligence is measured against similar circumstances, why isn't that all you need in the emergency context? It's just you alert, you know, pay attention to similar circumstances. This was an emergency response, the vehicle doing it, so you gauge their negligence based upon the circumstances they face.
I think we're talking about the same thing, but it is similar circumstances facing a driver of an emergency vehicle and not an ordinary driver, a reasonable, prudent person, as the jury is often reminded to think about in the course of a trial. It is a reasonable, prudent emergency vehicle driver, and that is a higher or it is a different standard of care. I get confused when I start talking about the higher standard of care and the lower standard of care. Looking at it from the plaintiff's point of view, it is a higher burden to overcome.
How would you articulate that? He said it's not ordinary negligence, it's not reckless disregard.
Okay.
What is it? And you also, two questions. You said you had some good reasons. You got interrupted, and I'd like to hear what you said.
Okay. I would articulate it in this manner. The Court of Appeals in El Paso, in telling us what it was not, said, here's what you have to do. The defendant, who always has the burden of proof on proving governmental immunity, which is what we're talking about here, has to prove that the driver was obeying the laws relating to emergency vehicles. Once the governmental entity or the driver, whoever is the defendant, proves that, then the burden shifts back to the plaintiff to prove that the person, in this case, in the Colster case, entered the intersection without determining that the intersection was clear. And the El Paso Court of Appeals said that occurred in this case, and it described somehow the first time the ambulance driver saw the plaintiff in this case. Okay. Then the U.S. Supreme Court, in a case called, Bryan County, Oklahoma versus Brown is the way it came out, defined deliberate indifference. They define deliberate indifference as ignoring the obvious consequences of the action, is what it says.
Well, you don't think a driver should be liable in these circumstances for ordinary negligence or not?
I do not.
Yes, sir. What should the standard be? How do you charge the jury?
The charge has to be something to the effect of an ordinary or a reasonably prudent emergency vehicle driver.
How's that different from ordinary negligence?
Because, as the court said in that San Antonio case, that driver of an emergency vehicle is held to a different degree of care than an ordinary prudent driver.
What is the significance of the repeated reference to conscious disregard or reckless disregard?
Well, conscious disregard deliberate indifference, reckless disregard, utter indifference, callous disregard, and obdurate disregard, shock to the conscience. Those are all terms that are used interchangeably by the court to mean what the Supreme Court said in that definition of deliberate indifference.
But you don't think the jury should be told those?
Yes, I think they should. I think they should be told that, that this is the standard of care.
Which is the standard of care? Reckless disregard?
Yes. I think that they should. I'm not very good at drafting special issues because those things have already been done for us. But I think that they should be told that something to the effect that if you find that the person was not acting in heedless or reckless disregard, as that term is defined in the special issues book, then you will find that the person is not negligent.
In your view, can the government be held liable, immunity's gone, for the conduct of an emergency vehicle driver that is less than reckless disregard?
Well, I think the standard has to be somewhere just less than reckless disregard. Because if you look at Royalty versus Walls, which is cited in my brief, it equates that reckless disregard with gross negligence. And let me give you an example. The court, the City of Lancaster versus Chambers, said that an emergency vehicle driver is entitled to qualified immunity if he can show that he was acting in the scope of his employment and that he was exercising discretionary acts and was acting in good faith. All right. My feeling is that a person who is grossly negligent or acting in its equivalent reckless disregard does not have the bona fides to prove this good faith in order to have qualified immunity. So there's got to be a standard there that a person who is entitled to qualified immunity, remember the court said that ordinary negligence is not an issue in qualified immunity. If he weren't negligent, he wouldn't have to have qualified immunity, is what the court said in the City of Lancaster. So qualified immunity puts the emergency vehicle driver on the same plane if the court adopts this reckless disregard standard of care, or the absence of reckless disregard, as I have put it.
Well, we're really bound by the statute.
Pardon me?
We're really bound by the statute. It's not up to us to decide what the care should be. We've got the Tort Claims Act, and we've got the Transportation Code.
Yes, sir.
And that's all there is.
Yes, sir, but due regard, as it appears in the two places in the Transportation Code, is not defined. It is qualified by the term reckless disregard for the safety of others, as that term appears in the Tort Claims Act.
How is it qualified?
Well, it says that in 24E of 6701D, which is now in the Transportation Code, that a person will exercise due regard for the safety of others, and then qualifies it by saying, but he shall not be excused for his reckless disregard for the safety of others. And then the provision of the Tort Claims Act, 101.055, says that same thing, that he, in absence of a statutory standard of care, then he has to have, he cannot be consciously indifferent or in reckless disregard for the safety of others. And so it is this intentional ignorance standard of care, this ignoring the the obvious consequences and obvious meaning consequences that you know about and still ignore that will create liability, in my view, for the driver of an emergency vehicle. And that theme appears in the city of Lancaster versus Chambers when it talks about the qualified immunity. And what I'm suggesting to the court here is that there is no greater defense to the city or for the city in the qualified immunity standard and in this reckless disregard standard, because they appear to me to be the same. And it doesn't make any difference whether the driver is entitled to qualified immunity or whether the court has to charge the jury with something other than this ordinary negligence standard of care. He's still on the same footing, and his employer, who is vicariously liable, is still on the same footing as he would be in either case. There are no further questions.
Any questions? Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
May it please the court, my name is John Gates. I'm an assistant city attorney with the city of El Paso. In all of the analyses, not only in these two cases, but the other cases, there is a party, an entity that we are forgetting, and that's the person that's lying at the end of this run by the emergency response vehicle, who is lying broken or bleeding or unconscious. And I think that anyone in this courtroom or anyone anywhere would be appalled if they were standing in the streets of Austin or Amarillo or El Paso and saw, obviously, an emergency situation, a burning building, a horrific car accident, and sat and walked, would be appalled if they sat and watched their firemen, their police officers, their EMS drivers, poking through traffic, stopping at the red lights, letting traffic clear, signaling for proper lane changes, all of that. And
well, no one is suggesting that.
I know, but at the point...
It seems to me that there also has to be a realization that if the emergency vehicle is in an accident, they're not going to get to the place where they need to be.
I understand. What I was leading up to is what's echoed by a lot of courts in this analysis, and that is if there was an ordinary standard of care that the ordinary negligence standards that an emergency response driver was subjected to, there would be no reason for the statute.
Do drivers typically get places when they don't wear their contacts, when they need to have corrective lenses?
Yes.
Okay. So it's okay to drive on the road without corrective lenses when you need them?
If they're, well, addressing that issue, I think that it was clear at the trial of this case that the driver, Don Sloan, did not need corrective lenses for driving. They were only reading glasses. So there was no issue. I don't believe there's any issue that she was acting negligently in not wearing glasses. I think the testimony was clear that she did not need
glasses. You say it's clear. Well, help me understand this. I need to know what you believe the proper standard is.
All right.
And maybe even need to know what the standard of the El Paso court actually articulated.
Okay, well.
Then I would like to get back to the glasses in light of that. Under the standard, when does evidence become controverted? And when does the El Paso court have the right to say there's no evidence to? I mean, I want you to articulate that standard in light of a breach of a particular law or regulation, and then look at, then particularize it to this case.
Okay.
Is there no evidence to support what the jury did?
I agree with the others before me that, and what the Colster court has said, that it's somewhere in between. And I think the standard of care and the jury submission would be, number one, there would be, the statute would be explained, it would be defined in the jury charge.
Well, how can it be defined? Do you find from a preponderance of the evidence that this is somewhere in between negligence and reckless disregard?
No, I believe that there would be definitions of what an emergency response vehicle is, perhaps what an emergency is, and all of those things. In other words, an intermediate step, we're not talking about ordinary negligence, we're not talking about gross negligence, but this intermediate step would be defined by way of the statute, that is, emergency response vehicle. Then I believe that the jury would be asked to find, you find, by preponderance of evidence, that this driver, if they have found that indeed it was an emergency, and this is an emergency response, violated that intermediate standard, and I believe that standard would be what the El Paso court suggested, and that is, are you complying with the law as it's set out? Were your lights on? Were your sirens wailing? Did you slow at the intersection? Did you do those things that are required of emergency response vehicles? If you did those things, then you're in compliance. You have not breached that intermediate duty. And I believe that's what would be submitted to a jury. They would be given definitions, and they would be asked, to analyze that conduct in context of the statutory requirements of an emergency response vehicle.
In that regard, and just assume with me for a second that there is a fact issue on corrective lenses and a fact issue on whether or not the driver was looking where they were going. Just because they have their lights on, their sirens on, and slow down at an intersection, if they can't see and are not looking, those two parts, if I recall, are not in the statute.
No.
So if they comply with the statute but are looking down for a contact lens or for a spilled cup of coffee, and run into a car, technically they're still in compliance with the statute, but I'm sure you would agree that that would not be the type of conduct that the law should allow to go without liability.
I agree. There is that gray area or this undefined area that you spoke of, but I believe just as in an ordinary negligence analysis by a jury, there is going to be a weighing at that point. I believe what this...
But going back to the question, then, I mean, since we do have those gray areas, how can we structure an instruction so that we cover not only the black and white areas, but also the gray areas?
I think the instruction would incorporate the idea that this is not an ordinary negligence standard, and it would also talk about recklessness and what that is, and this conscious disregard of some of the rights and safety of others on the road. At this point, the only thing we have to go by is the fact that it's somewhere in between. And the only thing we have to help us with is the statute. That is a problem that you brought up, that there are some areas that aren't defined that I think we'd have to. But I think that for sure we would have to let the jury know that we're not dealing with an ordinary defendant.
Would it be sufficient to have to just make the negligence question the conduct of an ordinarily prudent emergency vehicle driver? Would that be the intermediate standard, or?
I believe so. If that was carefully defined and the jury knew that an ordinarily prudent emergency response driver does not have to stop at a red light, does not have to pull over and stand, maybe as other cars do, and can stand in the middle of the road, and all those sorts of things. And I think a general instruction that they are relieved from the ordinary rules of the road to the extent necessary to accomplish their task. Maybe that's the fill-in there, that they are relieved from the ordinary rules of the road to the extent necessary to accomplish their task or their mission. And I think then the jury would be able to see, well, how far away were they, what was the traffic like, and that sort of thing.
But doesn't that a priori mean that when you go through an intersection and you hit someone, that you're going to be found liable? I mean, something has happened and you were not carrying out your mission. I mean,
I don't think that...
The same way that you say, well, if you entered the intersection without due care, the accident itself is sort of raised up under that kind of instruction.
No, I wouldn't agree. I think that, again, there's different rules, and I think we have to suspend the ordinary rules because we have to allow that emergency response driver to get to the other person, to the injured person. And so I think that the jury should be told in some form that, number one, you're not dealing with an ordinary defendant, and two, that what is paramount, or what they should consider, is that their primary task was to get there, and that the laws of the state of Texas give them certain rights, give them certain privileges on the road that other people don't have. And that, I think that I don't have to be drafted in. But I think that the jury's going to have to look at the negligence, if there is negligence, or at least the conduct, in relation to the necessity of that conduct, and that is maybe going through a red light or maybe not slowing down. In this case, the Colster, the EMS vehicle, actually stopped.
But in your particular case, whatever the standard is, it lays out all the black and white and has a gray area. How come the mere fact that driver was not complying with the restrictions that the state of Texas placed on that driver for driving? How does that not raise a fact issue?
On the eyeglasses. I believe it was explained away.
She has an explanation, but what about that explanation forced the jury to believe so that the jury's apparent failure to believe it must be discounted by the appellate court?
I think the reason that the Court of Appeal in El Paso decided this way is that they were looking at this not from an ordinary negligence standard. I think what's happening is everyone is trying to pound a square peg into a round hole. This is a different breed of negligence. And
so
that,
some of these things can be disregarded then. Some of the statutory requisites for an emergency vehicle driver, like having a siren or whatever they all are, those can be disregarded and it's still no evidence of a violation.
No, I don't believe that. I think that if there was finding that there was a lack of lights or sirens, then they're not acting as properly as an emergency response.
What's different about that and a finding that they are not complying with the state's requirement for what this person must do to be on the road?
Because I believe that the emergency response driver is lifted out temporarily while they're on that run from those ordinary negligence standards. And the eyeglass issue, I believe that the court analyzed this in light of the idea that we have another standard of negligence, that they can. Just assuming that that's true, that it's absolutely true that she was not wearing or that she was, that they needed the glasses, I think this is a good example where a court or a jury could analyze and say, but this is a different breed. We're not talking about
the jury
could
do that, but the jury's already done that.
Yeah.
I'm interested in how the court can say there are certain requirements of the law which the jury cannot find that a violation of breaches this duty.
Well, I believe what you're saying then is that the emergency response driver, in addition to those statutes that govern that conduct, also must subscribe to all of the statutes that govern ordinary users of the road. And I don't believe that's what the intent of the
legislature. Well, I thought you agreed in answer to Justice Abbott's question.
Pardon me?
I thought you agreed in response to Justice Abbott that certain requirements peculiar to a driver getting into the car were different from a stop sign. Maybe I misunderstood your answer. If you equate eyeglasses with a driver having to stop at the stop sign, then I understand your position.
I believe that question, I think you're talking about something in particular related to the emergency situation. Were the lights on, that set of requirements there?
That wasn't how I heard it, but I guess I understand your position. Eyeglasses are like stop signs.
Yes. That in view, again, in light of the situation, though in a sense they may fail and give way to the greater need in an emergency response situation.
Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court, in an attempt to respond to both attorneys, I will first point out the city attorney of Amarillo takes a position that we have, in his case, no ordinary negligence situation. He mentioned to you that he was not familiar with jury issues. I am familiar with jury issues, and I feel that the negligence issue would be given to the jury as an ordinary standard negligence care, and then the instructions, and that's the way in which it would be done. The instructions would qualify the different standards. But I don't think at any place that the courts or anything else can change what the legislature intended by using the term due regard. I don't think that we could say negligence as applied to an ambulance is a different standard from negligence. I don't think we could draw issues that would encompass that without using, as we always do, the 277 requirement and so on.
What about the words conscious, indifferent, and reckless disregard? The legislature also used those. What do we do with those words?
There was a case in the reckless disregard. There was a case in which there were not ordinances or standards, and the reckless disregard was put in there because of a fire truck that backed into a car, which was not in violation of any ordinance or any standard. It was put in there to show that there was a standard. I don't think that standard even reaches far enough to reach gross negligence. I don't think that does to the full extent, because the state does not pay in the event that it is determined that there's gross negligence. The statutes prevent the state from paying on the gross negligence thing. So I think that does not reach the standard of ordinary, of gross negligence. Get back to what City Attorney Mamarillo mentioned, the Chambers case and the affirmative defenses. The affirmative defenses, the Chambers case says that the immunity is affirmative defense, and in the cases of health, the Kennedy case, that the city, or in this case, must prove all elements of their affirmative defense. Both the attorneys, in speaking for the cities, tried to shift the burden to the state. Once the lights and the sirens on, then the burden shifts to the plaintiff to show that they were driving in bad faith. There are cases holding that the burden doesn't shift that far. But in both cases, that's what the arguments are. The Chambers case gave us an excellent definition of good faith. And in any of these cases, did the city attempt to apply the good faith standard? Let me give you what I have worked up here as would be the issue in a good faith case and ask you to see what you think of this. If they were applying for a summary judgment, this would be the standard. No reasonable prudent officer under the same or similar circumstances, while not wearing her corrective lenses, could have believed that entering the intersection against a red light when she could not see the traffic in the inside lane outweighed the clear risk to the public in entering the lane when she did. I took this from the Wadwitz case. And so that's why in either case was there affirmative defense, good faith thing applied for the summary judgment. They relied on taking it to the jury on the basis that the ambulance driver had the siren on and the horns and the lights going, and therefore that gives them a complete immunity. In State versus Terrell, Greenfell says, we don't believe the legislature intended such a broad exclusion. And therefore, the transportation code that's recently been enacted use the terms due care. They use them again and again, just like they had done in the previous statute. So the legislature's intent is contingency there, that due care is the standard they require. The purpose of the Tort Claim Act is to spread the damages among the government that this was allowable. In other words, to level the playing field and make the governments in the same category and the same level as private industry or a private person. The statute so relates. 101.21 gives us that standard. Yeah. Last but not least.
Counsel, your time is expired. Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. That concludes the argument in the first clause, and the court will now take a brief recess.
All right.